Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest. I'm Mel Gertov, and I'll be reporting and commenting on the most important and sometimes the most neglected international news of the past week or so. Here are some of the news items I'll be covering. Dictatorship and drug trafficking in Latin America. An historic upgrade to U.S.-Japan relations. And environmental justice, a court ruling, and a banking study. Dictatorship and drug trafficking in Latin America. Last week I reported on the left versus right confrontations between Mexico and Ecuador, reflecting the growing divide in Latin America between left-leaning countries such as Mexico, Brazil, Colombia, Nicaragua, and Venezuela, and right-leaning countries such as Ecuador, Peru, Argentina, and Bolivia. Now add El Salvador to the list of repressive right-wing governments. The administration of Nayib Bukele has become another dictatorship by popular demand, ruthlessly suppressing not just drug traffickers, which has attracted international as well as Salvadoran admiration, but also political opponents, critics, and the judicial system. If you think of Rodrigo Duterte of the Philippines and his war on drugs, you get the idea. Bukele has around 80% popular support, mainly for jailing people involved in the drug trade. Some 70,000 people are in prison, many without due process, a particular instance of the general problem of human rights and constitutional violations for which Bukele offers no apologies. As for Ecuador, it faces an even greater problem than El Salvador with drug trafficking. The country is sometimes characterized as a narco state. Back in December, the Attorney General announced a number of arrests of people in law enforcement who were tied to gangs, saying it's a, quote, a clear x-ray of how drug trafficking has taken over the institutions of the state. That's the point at which the gangs responded with violence against the police and in prisons. One gang invaded a major TV station and held several people hostage. President Daniel Noboa signed a declaration of internal armed conflict, naming 22 gangs as terrorist organizations and asserting that they have about 40,000 men. The dispute with the gangs, he said, is over our way of life. An historic upgrade to U.S.-Japan relations. A summit meeting April 10 and 11 between President Biden and Prime Minister Kishida Fumio has resulted in major changes in U.S.-Japan security relations. These follow on a common evaluation of the threat posed by China, North Korea's increasing missile potential, and Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Prior to the summit, Kishida said, quote, "The current security environment is tough and complex, and we are at a turning point in history. Cooperation between Japan and the United States and like-minded countries is a very important issue," unquote. Among the agreements reached by the two leaders are, first, an improved military common command and control system, co-production of certain missiles for air defense, Japanese participation in U.S. space missions, major new private investments in each other's country, including an investment by Toyota of nearly $8 billion for electric car battery production in Greensboro, North Carolina, which is expected to create 3,000 jobs. U.S. and Japanese corporations will also invest in AI research at both countries' universities, including the University of Washington. New high-level dialogue on ways to meet climate change objectives. U.S. support of Japan's restarting of nuclear reactors, a rather surprising addition given the unpopularity in Japan of nuclear power since the Fukushima tragedy. And finally, but unmentioned, the controversy of Nippon Steel's bid to take over U.S. Steel, which was left unmentioned. The upgrade in U.S.-Japan security relations is not surprising given Japan's changing strategic perspective in the last few years. Its military spending has jumped, its weapons modernization program has advanced, and it has joined with the U.S. in the so-called Quad, the Quadrilateral Security Dialogue that includes India and Australia. Recently announced is a U.S.-Japan-Australia-Philippines joint naval exercise in disputed waters of the South China Sea. The U.S., Japan, and Philippines held a first-ever joint White House Security Conference April 11, with China's, quote, coercive and unlawful, that's Biden's words, actions in the South China Sea, the main topic. And now, as part of the Biden-Kishida summit, Japanese involvement with the AUKUS security group, Australia, United Kingdom, and U.S., will also be under discussion. All these moves have China in mind, further stoking tensions in East Asia. China has always been concerned about Japan again becoming a military power, and now that Japan is a member of the Quad and potentially of AUKUS, Beijing is expressing alarm. Its foreign ministry issued a statement that said, in part, quote, U.S.-Japan relations should not forget other countries, harm their interests, or undermine regional peace and stability. China firmly opposes the Cold War mentality and small group politics. China firmly rejects anything that creates and drives up tensions and may undermine other countries' strategic security interests. Looking at U.S. policy from China's perspective, it has to seem disturbingly inconsistent with Washington's professed intentions. On April 2nd, just prior to the summits with Japan and the Philippines, Biden had a telephone conversation with Xi Jinping that didn't break new ground but did have an overall positive appraisal of the relationship. According to the Chinese readout of the conversation, Xi said relations have stabilized. Let's see whether Xi regards the latest U.S.-Japan-Philippines arrangements as confrontational or stabilizing. Environmental justice, a court ruling, and a banking study. The European Court of Human Rights in France has ruled that Switzerland had violated its citizens' rights by failing to meet climate change standards. The case was brought by a local French mayor and students from Portugal under the European Convention on Human Rights. They were joined by Senior Women for Climate Protection, Swiss women ages 64 and older, who were backed by Greenpeace. The plaintiffs were only awarded their expenses. It is up to the Swiss government to make policy changes to conform with the ruling. The ruling cannot be appealed. To comply with the court's ruling, Switzerland will have to re-examine its investment pattern. According to Reuters, quote, the financial sector, including the central bank, is already under pressure from environmental groups to curb the number of climate-damaging transactions it processes. Data published last month by the Swiss National Bank showed that its investments were linked to 12 million metric tons of carbon emissions in 2023, unquote. Switzerland has major investments in Chevron and ExxonMobil. Those investments link the country's trade and financial sectors, producing challenges to the way Switzerland normally does business. Speaking of the banking industry, a study of how its avowed commitment to fighting climate change has worked out shows that such voluntary acts do not produce results. Big banks had signed on to the Glasgow Financial Alliance for Net Zero a few years ago, promising to change their lending practices to support the effort to rein in climate change. But the study by the European Central Bank and various economists, quote, cast doubt on the efficacy of voluntary climate commitments for reducing financed emissions, whether through divestment or engagement, unquote. While banks had reduced lending to the oil and gas industries, the reduction was nowhere near what is necessary to make a dent in climate change, the study found. In other news, is there a new NATO mission forthcoming in the Ukraine war? With uncertainty rising over U.S. reliability in assisting Ukraine's defense, NATO's leadership is seeking to have the organization take over as the principal outlet for military aid to Ukraine. The so-called Ukraine Defense Contact Group, based in Germany, which coordinates aid provided by NATO's 32 members, plus about 18 other countries. The leadership is proposing to raise $100 billion in 5 years. This potential change, and it is only that since Hungary is likely to object and the U.S. itself is not yet on board, comes as President Zelensky takes the politically risky step of changing the draft law. The new law will lower the draft age from 27 to 25 and end various exemptions. Ukraine has suffered huge casualties, especially of late due to the Russian offensive and lack of sufficient weapons. But Ukraine has to be buoyed by renewed talk of NATO membership, with U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken saying membership is on the horizon. Ukraine membership will be taken up at the next NATO summit in July. A few notes from the Israel-Hamas war. While Iran's attack on Israel and Israel's response have dominated the headlines, the war inside Israel goes on without relief. First, following on warnings from Biden, aid shipments into Gaza have improved significantly, according to Israel, reaching over 400 trucks a day at times. But Biden said there is still room for improvement, and the UN aid agency says the actual figure is about half of what Israel is reporting. Next, the newspaper Haaretz reports that barely 3 months into the year, 2024 has already seen a record amount of West Bank land declared as state-owned property by Israel. The civil administration in Israel in recent years has been steadily eating into West Bank land, and it is safe to assume the goal is to expand Israeli settlements there. And finally, in the ongoing negotiations in Cairo, though a six-week ceasefire seems to be acceptable to all sides, the number of Hamas prisoners who might be released in exchange for 40 Israeli hostages is being further complicated by a Hamas statement that it does not hold 40 hostages who fit the proposed criteria, which include most everyone except young men and male soldiers. Is Iran moving closer toward acquiring a nuclear weapon? The Trump administration's decision to withdraw from the nuclear agreement with Iran may finally get its just reward, an Iranian nuclear bomb. International inspectors of Iran's nuclear facilities have reportedly found alarming evidence of highly enriched uranium being produced at Iran's most important and most secret nuclear fuel production site, known as Fordow. The Washington Post reports that Iran is now, quote, closer to nuclear weapons capability than at any time in the country's history, according to confidential inspection reports and interviews with officials and experts who closely monitor Iran's progress, unquote. Estimates are that Iran could have a deliverable weapon in 2 years. It is not hard to imagine that all this is old news to Israel's intelligence community. With tensions with Iran very high again, an Israeli strike on Fordow becomes quite conceivable and quite alarming. But Israel has only itself to thank for Iran's quest for a nuclear weapon. The war with Hamas has pushed leaders in Tehran not only to support those opposed to Israel, but also to see a nuclear bomb as their best option for deterring a U.S. or Israeli attack on Iran. Finally, South Korea's legislative election is a blow to its president. South Koreans went to the polls April 10 to elect 300 National Assembly members. The results were a devastating defeat for the party of President Yoon Suk-yeol, who still has 3 years left to serve on his 5-year term and now becomes a lame duck. The main opposition party of Lee Jae-myung, who challenged Yoon for the presidency 2 years ago, won 190 seats to Yoon's party's 108 seats. The result does not quite give Lee's party a supermajority, but it does give it, and him, an opportunity to block anything Yoon proposes or force Yoon to negotiate. Lee Jae-myung will no doubt run again for president, assuming he doesn't get caught up in some scandal. His foreign policy views differ substantially from Yoon's: closer ties to China, engagement with North Korea, distancing from Japan. However, 3 years is a long way off, and in Korean politics, a lifetime. Many domestic issues, starting with the economy and housing prices, dominate the political agenda, more so than international issues. And there is no telling what the domestic scene might look like in a few years. Of course, a crisis with North Korea is always possible, and perhaps soon, as the North increases its missile testing. Being a lame duck president at such a time could shape President Yoon's response. That's the Global Citizen International Digest for the week. I'm Mel Gertov. Thanks for listening, and take good care.